Tune in tomorrow. Same cat time, same cat channel.
To the Batmobile. This could be the break we've been looking for.
Oh, Catwoman. Catwoman, will you never learn?
So you didn't tell the truth.
You ever hear of a crook who did?
You filthy criminals.
It doesn't pay to court disaster, Robin. She's playing right into our hands. I planned it all this way.
You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, dear kinsmen and kinswomen. I haven't heard of anything blowing up in Seattle yet today. It's just another fear point. Or is it? We'll find out. When the day's over, we'll find out if anything has taken place. I've looked and haven't seen a thing. This is what I expected, of course, that nothing would happen. But it's not even, I think the time was actually supposed to be 105, if I remember correctly. I don't know. And it's not quite that there yet. We're about 13 minutes away. So, here again is another date, but I have to say it was very interesting. It really was. And we'll find out if anything takes place. So, nothing yet. But I have to say that that movie was very interesting. And I watched a couple of those movies about it. And it could very well be that because it was so not well publicized, it certainly wasn't publicized by the media, the regular media, the fake news media. The only what would be publicized by that is the fake event, or, you know, if they really did kill people, because they do kill people too in these events, these false flags. But I hadn't even heard about it if it wasn't for somebody that emailed me, and thank you to that woman who emailed me. Thank you. And, I didn't consider it a real waste of time because it showed a lot about the 9/11 thing, and it was a brush up on the thing anyway. So it was interesting. Interesting to see the predictive programming that goes on in all the children's cartoons, etc., etc. It's really weird to think of the things, the ideas they're planting into everyone's head, especially the children, you know? So we'll see what goes on. And let me tell you, they want to spill some major blood before the end of the decade. So, you never do know. So, last week, when we were on the Watchtower and the Masons, the Watchtower, the Space Needle, and the Masons, it was remarkable what was being said about injections and about, you know, replacing body organs, or that the blood has our personality in it, and so on and so forth. We're going to continue from where we left off last week. If you're reading along with me, if you'll notice, if you got the newsletter, I'll just tell you this now. If you have the newsletter that I sent out, you can just look in there under the links. And you can do that by going to my site if you didn't get the newsletter, davidjamesboston.com. Go under newsletters and go under the October one, and there'll be a link to the book, The Watchtower and the Masons, if you want to go along with me. I'll wait a few minutes and speak until you have a chance to get your book open. I'll tell you what the page is going to be so you can get it ready. It's going to be page 172. And so, you know, very interesting. You know, when people are telling the truth, and they're even fakers, you know, there's a lot of fakers telling truths. And, you know, they have to tell some truth or else nobody would listen to them. So that's what you have to realize, that, you know, even though you are exposing people that are doing, you know, that you know are fake and giving wrong information, disinformationalists, I don't know the word disinformationalist or disinformationist. I don't really know what the word would be. But somebody that purports disinformation has to give a good amount of truth along with the disinformation, or nobody would even give it any kind of credibility whatsoever. The idea is that they give you a certain percentage of truth, maybe like 90%. Fritz used to say that. That's one thing I listened to, and I found it to be true that they might give you 90% truth, but then they slip in the Mickey, and it's usually right at the end of the video or the end of the presentation. And I still find that to be correct today. Dr. Deagle is one of these people who I caught him. And I'm going to put that up on my BitChute very soon. It's just a short video, and it's from the end of one of his videos. And he is showing you that he is one of these Masons. And he says that we're all on our way to becoming a Christ, just like Jesus was. Does that sound familiar? Let me just say this, right? The secret doctrine of Freemasonry is that we all have a potential Christ within us, and that we all are on our way to becoming, quote-unquote, God or a Christ. And the secret word, the lost word of Freemasonry, is the Christ within. And this is exactly what Dr. Deagle, he's one of these people that sell a lot of products, and he's a dazzler with verbiage. He talks way over everybody's head, and I don't even know if he knows what he's talking about half the time. And so I left him rather quickly, because I realized there's no, you might as well speak to me in Latin. You know what I mean? It's not that I can't, you know, it's that the stuff he's talking about is just not viable to me. It's a lot of fear mongering with these people. And, you know, this is like this, you know, I give you this thing that happened, that's supposed to happen in Seattle, because it's interesting. But I told you, as I gave it to you, don't waste your time fearing. I'm not fearing it. It's just, how many times have you seen these dates over and over and over and over where the world's going to end, the financials is going to crash? The finance has been crashing since 2008. It's never got up. You know what I mean? They're saying, oh, it's the end next year. You know, I don't even waste my time with these things. Usually I wouldn't waste my time with this, but there was some real, you know, evidence that it's very possible. The only thing that's twisted about it, it was the European slant of it, like 311 instead of 113. In case you don't know what that means, it means when the Europeans give a date, they give the month first, and the day of the month, second. Is that correct? I'm trying to think this out. 3/11. Yeah. So in other words, ours would be 11/3. Theirs would say 3/11. And that was the difference. And that kind of was a little strange, but however, it was still viable because it doesn't matter if 11 times 3 is 33 or 3 times 11 is 33. And I told you that 9/11 was coded in the date today. In other words, 11/3 is 33. 3 times 3 is 9. That's the devil's number, the father, their father. And then you have 2 times 19, right? Is 38. 3 and 8 is 11. The children, 11, 9/11 is coded in today's date. I'm so surprised that people haven't said, wow, you know, because that wasn't in any of the videos that I saw. They didn't even pick up on that. Anyway, let's venture in and start digging. So you know we're on page 172. I'm just going to back up a little bit real quick. And it says, the Watchtower Society calls blood transfusions a vague medical mystery. 1963 yearbook, page 69. And They're Awake, 7/22/63. Page 14 claims, doctors admit, quote unquote, that blood transfusions are a fad, more mystical than scientific. If the Watchtower is correct, then the world's best doctors are practicing mysticism, and the society's view is scientific. So whose policy towards blood transfusions is mysticism? The doctors or the Watchtower Society's? Good question, eh? The modern Masons received their mystical, The modern Masons received their mystical religious aspects into their trade guilds in the 17th century from the Rosicrucians. Without sidetracking to document that, let it be just stated that the 18th Masonic degree known as the Rose Croix, the Red Cross, perpetuates many of the Rosicrucian symbols, and that the modern Rosicrucians were created by a Mason. Quoting from the book, I know that in years ago, the Rosicrucians were making acid. So they're involved in scientific type of things. They were always involved. So Dr. Frankenstein was probably, if it was real, that is, would be a Rosicrucian. At that time, it was a different time. Anyway, so let me continue here. The Rosicrucian cosmoconception or mystic Christianity, it reads, this is from the book, a Mason quoting from the book, the Rosicrucian cosmic conception or mystic Christianity, it reads, the blood is one of the highest products of the vital body as it is the carrier of nourishment to every part of the body, and the direct vehicle of the ego. Very interesting. This is summed up, blood carries the feelings and emotions. Therefore, when you get angry, we show blood in the face, right? So when your emotions get high, I'm telling you that. You get your blood, you know, in an uproar, right? So that kind of fits, right? Blood carries the feelings and emotions. That's from page 606. Further, it states, the blood is the highest expression of the vital body, for it nourishes the entire physical organism. It is also, in a sense, the vehicle of the subconscious memory, and in touch with the memory of nature, situated in the highest division of the etheric region. The blood carries the pictures of life from the ancestors to descendants for generations, where there is common blood. Remember, we're reading a Rosicrucian book. Don't get too excited here. As the blood passes through the heart, it engraves the pictures it carries. Therefore, the heart is the home of altruistic love. The idea here is that the emotion of love physically resides in the heart. Well, I mean, I'm not going to say this isn't true, even though it's Rosicrucian speaking. I think it's very interesting. A very interesting way to put it. And, of course, your heart is where you feel the emotion of love, don't you, in your heart? But you also feel the emotion of hate there too, right? Very interesting. I'm just throwing that in there. We continue. The section, The Blood, the Vehicle of the Ego, pages 143 through 146, states, not until the blood is made by the child does it think of itself as I. Science has lately discovered that haemolysis results from the inoculation of the blood of one individual. Hall, Masonic, Hermetic, page, this is a big one, gives proof of this and even refers to an Encyclopedia Britannica article about the genesis of Freemasonry. So, I have to go back and start from that other sentence because that was just a note. Science has lately discovered that haemolysis, I think that's how you say it, results from the inoculation of blood of one individual into the veins of another of a different species, causing the death of the lower of the two. Thus, any animal inoculated with the blood of man dies. The blood of a dog transfused into the vein of a bird kills the bird. Science merely states the fact. The occult scientist gives the reason. Further, it states that mixing blood of different species produces a hybrid which is an abomination. Let me just stop right there. Who's been telling you this all along? That hybrids are an abomination. We are in a world of hybrids right now, are we not? We're surrounded by people that have mixed blood. What happens when you mix blood? You produce a hybrid, which is an abomination. It's an abomination not only to you and I, but it's an abomination to the Heavenly Father. Every tree, every plant not planted by the Father shall be plucked up and, you know, goodbye. So if you're a selfish man or woman and you're having sex with another race and you produce a child, you've doomed that child because of your feelings, because of your lusts, because of your stupidity, because of your misunderstanding of the importance of blood. Why do you think these hybrids are so nutso? Why do you think the Jews are mentally ill and have more physical and mental problems than any other of the beasts of the field? They are the most subtle beasts of the field, correct? Correct. So, isn't it funny that Dr. David, me, I told you that this produces hybrids and they are an abomination. See, not only is a hybrid an abomination, not a hybrid person or a hybrid animal, but a hybrid priesthood is. You see? The Father doesn't go for this stuff. He explicitly told us not to mix things. So, it continues here now. The reader has seen that the Rosicrucian claim that only the occult scientists understand the danger of inoculations or vaccinations. Here is the Watchtower Society with identical beliefs to the occultic Rosicrucians, claiming that the medical profession is demonic and practicing mysticism. Who would you, as the reader, say practices mysticism? Where has all the confusion come from? Well, if you want me to answer the question, Mr. Springmeier, I would say that the mysticism causes a lot of confusion because they're just practicing just like the medical community. I'd say that they're equal in it because they both are practicing on people like they're guinea pigs. What do you think that Frankenstein was supposed to be? He's a guinea pig. What has the medical system done over and over and over to us? They've practiced on us like guinea pigs. Giving and the medical, right? The third largest killer does that, and the fourth largest killer does it too, correct? The pharmakia? Which is just, you know, it's crazy, but it's evil. It's complete evil. It's complete, what's the word? Sorcery is the word that's used of it in the scriptures. Pharmakia is sorcery. Who practices sorcery? You know what I mean? So this question, where has all this confusion come from? I can explain it to you. The devil is the author of confusion, and his children are also the authors of confusion, chaos, corruption, etc., etc. So who practices mysticism? Both of them. I'm answering the question. Back to the book. If indeed Russell borrowed the idea of degrees of enlightenment, keys to the scripture, progressive light, and hidden knowledge from the Masons, and it appears he did, then indirectly they may have caused the major process of watchtower thought. That statement will take some explaining. Is Rutherford alone responsible for spoiling Charles Taze Russell's organization? Did he betray Russell? It is popular today by both Jehovah's Witnesses and non-Jehovah's Witnesses to tend to disassociate Russell from the movement today. This dilutes the credit, quote-unquote, or blame, quote-unquote, Russell receives for where the Jehovah's Witnesses are today. And indeed, if you have some pet doctrine that Russell espoused that Rutherford changed, it's easy to feel that Rutherford is responsible for the Jehovah's Witness sect, but that is not the case. I want to make a comment again here, and that is, I've noticed when I've spoken with them, today's Jehovah's Witnesses, they distance themselves from Russell for sure, because they know it's been exposed. Obviously, you don't distance yourself from somebody unless something has been exposed that is not good about that entity, shall I say. Right? Let's continue. Russell, using his borrowed Masonic concepts, set the stage for what happened. Russell's religion was based on progressive light. Hello. That the night was turning to dawn was proof that the day was coming. The millennial dawn was a light that was getting progressively brighter. And the big proof that this was a millennial dawn was that the light was getting brighter. The response was good. Let me stop and comment again. I have to comment, folks. I hope that doesn't aggravate you if I comment. But speaking of the light getting brighter, it's the same progression up the Masonic scale. Every degree you're asking the worshipful master, again, they're calling somebody master right here, just like the Catholics, just like the other aspect of Babylon, Judaism, right? They call them rabbi, master, father, you know, whatever it is, maestro, right? You see that you ask him every degree for more light. So as you're taking on these demons and these helpers that either come and live inside you or they hang around with you as well, you're getting brighter. You know, they show people that are intelligent with a light bulb on the top of their head. When they get an idea, they're brighter. They've got more light. See the programming in that alone? A light bulb comes on above your head. I'm brilliant. I've got more light. You see, this is what this is all about. The more demons you take on, supposedly the more light you have. Until the 33rd degree where you are now linked with the quintessential light bringer, Lucifer, the spiritual king of the world. You see the parallel here? So it says the response was good. People wanted to get progressive enlightenment. However, in contrast to the Freemasons, the JWs, after baptism, do not have progressive secret levels to ascend. In order to provide progressive light to the initiates, new light must be delivered periodically. I want to comment because this is exactly what I've been telling you about holding a power base over somebody with Gnostic religions. You see, in order to get this new light delivered to you periodically, you have to keep coming back to the light source. You understand? And that's what it's all about. That's how you create a power base over people. So it continues. Thus, the Masons' indirect contribution, the concept of progressive light, was to lock the Watchtower Society into a process where they had to continue giving new light. For if new light stopped, then the proof of the new dawn and its coming millennium vanish. Does the reader not realize that Rutherford had this figured out? And if Rutherford had not given new light, do you think the society would have remained stagnant, like the Bible students who have remained loyal to Russell all these years? No, as soon as Russell died, Woodworth Freetag and others immediately took up the slack to produce new light. Remember that this Woodworth fellow said he had problems with demon possession and that he was translating things, and he claimed that posthumously, this is from last week, that Russell had created this work that this fellow Woodworth Freetag created, remember? So it continues. The first new light was on the mystery books of Ezekiel and Revelations. Rutherford's big challenge. Now understand, just in case you didn't know, Rutherford is now the one who took over after Russell. Okay. What's funny about the whole thing too, I should mention to you, that he would have to go into a room and get the answers from an Iraqi Jew. But we'll come to that in the future, I'm sure. You see, it's a little deeper than you ever could imagine. It's crazy, really. Rutherford's big challenge was to keep the flow of new light to a minimum so that his new light would be the principal new light. But if he had not been there, there were numerous others that had realized the process of new light. And just like the Masons going from degree to degree, as long as the JW feels he is getting progressive light, he feels progress. Feels progress. He feels progress. Get it? In his heart. This is also the same idea behind the living prophets of the LDS, which we'll get to these Mormons, don't worry, and the RLDS churches, although their prophets in modern times haven't given much new light. But it is the new light, all that is all this new light all that it's cracked up to be? No. To a large extent, it's semantics. Just as Masons rename symbols X and Y at different degrees or levels, so too the JWs rename every so often the components of their religion and just pass it off as new light. Sometimes the remaining has swung a full circle. Get it? You know, there's a lot of people that are out here preaching these days, and they're just like rats running around in circles. If you've ever killed a squirrel or killed a rodent, usually if you hit them with your pellet gun, they run towards home. But when they know they've had it, they run around in circles until they drop. So when somebody knows they're dying and their ministry is dying and their entity is dying, you know what I'm talking about, right? What they do is they just keep repeating the same old messages over and over. They've already done these messages, most of them, and they just keep repeating them over and over and over. They never give you anything new. They never come up with anything new because they're dying. spiritually, I, you know, probably came a while ago, but that's the way it goes. I think you can read between the lines, ladies and gentlemen. So, we continue. The problem is that for so long, Christian focus has been on the details and not the process. It is not so important that Russell's prophecies are shown false, or Rutherford's, or Franz's. Franz is the one that went into the Iraqi Jew, excuse me. The Millerites and the Second Adventists were wrong, but for the Adventists there was someone to pick up the banner and charge on. That person was C.T. Russell, Charles Taze Russell. And there will always be someone to grab the fallen banner of a false prophecy and charge on, until the process is challenged rather than the details. Now, that's very interesting. That should be made note of in your mind if you wanted to go after a false prophet or something like that. What Fritz is saying here is that you have to challenge the process rather than the details. Very interesting. After Russell's death, the Bible students, 4,000, kept the details and have stagnated. The rest of the International Bible students, 17,000 of them, stayed with Rutherford and the process and have experienced growth. Rutherford understood the process in of end principles of Russell's. Russell, in many ways, set the stage for what happened. By de-emphasizing Christ and by emphasizing hidden knowledge, he played a key role in the formation of today's Jehovah Witnesses. Let me stop right there again. This is exactly what the new Bible versions do. They take the deity of Christ and de-emphasize it. They remove it even. And then, you know, that what that does is that is saying that he's not God in the flesh, the Father in the flesh. You see? So here he says again, I'm going to read this one again. By de-emphasizing Christ and by emphasizing hidden knowledge, he played a key role in the formation of today's Jehovah Witnesses. For today, in Russell's legacy, the key to understanding the Bible and salvation is the society. The goal of the initiate is to learn knowledge and take in light consequently. The JW, Jehovah Witness, spends his time studying watchtower material, which is, ladies and gentlemen, their mediator between God and them. But see, their God, Jehovah, is the devil. You see? Very interesting, isn't it? Make no mistake, that has nothing to do with Yahweh. Again, there's an hybrid term. The name Jehovah comes from, I'm going to keep reminding you this, comes from the fact that they would have the Tetragrammaton, which is Yahweh, and they didn't want to say the name Yahweh, so below it they would write Adonai, Lord. So they mixed Lord, Baal, with the Tetragrammaton and came out with the name Jehovah. That tells you that's not Yahweh's name. That's a perversion of his name. And you've added, that's just like Judeo-Christianity. You can't add Baal to the Father. I mean, let's get real here. So when I say Jehovah is the devil, it's Baal. That's what it is. Don't feel too bad about that, that we were tricked about these things. But thank the Father that he's revealed these things. And why wouldn't he? So today, for today, Russell's legacy, the key to understanding the Bible and salvation is the society. The goal of the initiate is to, I've read this already, but to learn knowledge and take in light consequently. So the JW spends his time studying watchtower material. After studying through two book studies, which often takes 2 years, he is deemed suitable enough for the next level. The next level, get it? Baptism. In contrast to the tragic or comical at times script the society is playing, where their role is to continue to provide new light, the Christians have continued to emphasize a relationship on one's Creator. Intimacy with God is stressed. Therefore, developing a character that pleases God has been given high priority. Although Watchtower material does not have material on self-improvement, like, you know, you remember the one with the Crystal Cathedral there, the thrust is not really on personal growth, but rather on producing quotas. And since the best way to do something can be added is hours in door-to-door service, that is where the emphasis is put. A factory produces shoes not to please its customers, not to build a satisfactory relationship with its customer, but rather to produce a quota. For many JWs, the author knows, that's Fritz saying that, a relationship with God is not important. They are concerned with the production quotas of the society. Sounds like the police force, right? Sounds like what I've been telling you, that we should have, I stress that we should have a personal relationship with the Heavenly Father himself, Yahweh, and we should stop worshiping man and institutions. For if you worship man and institutions like these and follow them, one day he will say, depart from me, I never knew you. So the way to ensure that you know him and he knows you, I mean, obviously he knows you either way. He knows who you are, but he didn't have a relationship with you. He didn't know you. You didn't take the time to know him. And so therefore, to ensure that won't be said to you, that's one of my greatest fears from times past, that the Father would say something like that to me. I don't have that fear really anymore because I more have faith. You know, that fear is the opposite of faith. And fear will do you no good. Except fearing and respecting the Father and knowing what he, that you are just clay in his hand in a way. You know what I'm saying? An healthy fear, not the kind of fear you're thinking about. So it continues here. If the quota is so many smiles or so many frowns, then that is what's strived for. The claim that Russell was an angel, I'm studying a fellow right now who claims he is a fallen angel, and he claims that we are all the serpent. He claims that we have an evil twin inside of us that is trying to take us down, and all kinds of crazy things. He even stated that Lucifer created the first men in the Bible, and that Jehovah, he said, created Adam. And that's just the tip of the iceberg with this fellow. I'm doing a study on him right now, and one of our brothers, I asked him to study this with me and check and see if I'm seeing things correctly, which I believe I am. Not only did I, you know, study that, I studied the fellow's skull, and my goodness, this is not an Adamic skull. And it's almost believable to me, if not definitely believable to me, that he does have a fallen angel inside of him. He admitted to it himself. He's made prophecies that have not come true. Made a lot of different claims. I will be releasing that in the future, but this is the same type of thing. Listen, the claim that Russell was an angel and that he was the seventh messenger, a man on the level of Martin Luther. Amazing. The notes from that say more precise. They say he was greater. St. Paul and Pastor Russell were the greatest. It's that's from the Watchtower, November 1st, 1917. Very interesting. The seventh messengers to the church. It shows, say, you know, Paul, John, Waldo, Arius, Wycliffe, Luther, and Russell. Boy, they sure like to put themselves in positions that nobody, you know, they're not really appointed to, you know what I mean? Russell was considered one of the seven messengers to the church. The Finished Mystery, 1918, page 64. Poor, you know, another, what do you call it, typo here. Okay, we're continuing on page 177. This may provoke smiles from historians. It's taken seriously by Russell's followers. One expression that occasionally pops up in Russell's writings that identifies him more to the Freemasons than Luther is his use of the word philosophy. Luther had a lifetime aversion to philosophy. In contrast, the Freemasons claim Masonry is the legitimate successor. From the earliest times, the custodian and depository of the great philosophical and religious truths embodied in symbols, emblems. Further, the true Mason is a practical philosopher. I believe this is Manly P. Hall, and he is known as Freemasonry's greatest philosopher. So there is a truth to this, and Luther, I'm sure, knew what he was talking about. You notice how I'm opposed to science, that I believe it's at enmity with God, with the Father Yahweh, with God. But I didn't say that all science is evil. Science has produced some good things, but science has produced more bad things than good. In my opinion. So, he continues, further, the true Mason is a practical philosopher who, under religious emblems in all ages adopted by wisdom, builds upon plans traced by nature and reason, the moral edifice of knowledge. Masonry and philosophy, without being one and the same thing, have the same object. I think that's objective, is what it's supposed to say. Christian reformers have been reluctant to refer to their teachings as philosophy because they have heeded the warning in Colossians 2 verse 8, see to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the traditions of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. The traditions of men. Who is that? Who would be trying to... The Jews, the traditions of men. See? Empty deception. Taking you captive through philosophy. Philosophies like, you know, the Hegelian dialectic. They take us captive through that philosophy, don't they? See, me talking about it doesn't promote it. Me talking about it like problem, reaction, solution. They take us captive through these philosophies. Very interesting, huh? Let's continue. The International Bible Student said of Russell, his explanatory writings on the Bible are far more extensive than the combined writings of St. Paul, St. John, Arius, Waldo, Wycliffe, and Martin Luther, the six messengers to the church who preceded him. Who said that? His Bible students. Luther had an amazing... Listen, we're talking... Oh, I must stop right here. And this is something I meant to do last week. This is going to be something interesting. I'm going to stop right here for a minute. So they say that his writings on the Bible are far more extensive than the combined writings of St. Paul. In other words, his writings are more important and more extensive than all of the others put together. You get it? So what I was going to tell you is how he has rejected the Christian church, how he has rejected the Father in heaven, how he has rejected Christian doctrine, and how he has taken on the Arian, remember, heresy? That's A-R-I-A-N, heresy. You know how Arian is spelled with a Y, right? And I thought it was an E-N, it's A-N. But I have to show you something here now. Now, in Fritz's book here, it says that the Arian conspiracy states that Jesus Christ was not God. He was just a man. I'm going to show you something that I found when I began to look into this. And since we're almost the halfway point right here, let's take, while I prepare the material real quick, I just got to look up the Aryan conspiracy. And not conspiracy, the Aryan heresy. And listen to my song, Blind to See, from my album, To Begin to Destroy. Blind to See.
The man who tells the truth is universally disliked by every person. Anyone who believes what anyone else writes or says without thoroughly researching it and making sure that it is absolutely true is a puppet on a string. And when the puppet master calls the tune, he will dance.
You play the dream. You go to work and come home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Saxon's Creed radio show, brought to you from davidjamesboston.com, your source for truth and more. You know, it is amazing to me. What I'm about to show you is what it has to be is a cover-up. You see, if the Presbyterian Church was involved in this heresy, and Fritz said they were, and the Jehovah's Witnesses are also part of this heresy, and this heresy started a long time ago, like right after Yeshua had been resurrected. Somebody's trying to cover it all up. Why do I say that? Fritz Springmeier said that it was, that he was only a man and not God, which means you're an antichrist for saying such a thing, which means that that wasn't the whole Presbyterian Church. It was a certain fellow in Scotland in the Presbyterian Church that was touting this heresy. But also, this is Russell's, he is a believer of this heresy. And so, I don't think Fritz would lie. I read to you earlier in this, if you go through this whole series, you'll see what I said about the Arian conspiracy. Now, I want to show you what it says about the Arian conspiracy, and I had found this, and I was alerted to this. And I think it's very interesting. I think something's going on. Arianism is a non-Trinitarian Christological doctrine, which asserts the belief that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, who was begotten by God the Father at the point in time, a creature distinct from the Father, and is therefore subordinate to him, but the Son is also God. Now, you see something wrong with this whole statement already? Arianism is non-Trinitarian, yet both of these are separate from each other and are God. And of course, there's the Holy Spirit, right? They didn't mention the Holy Spirit. So, you know, that's not non-Trinitarian. I mean, you know, just because they didn't mention the Holy Spirit, that's all I can say about it. So in other words, it seems to me that somebody's trying to cover something up here, you know, and then there was this other one that I came across, and this may take more investigation, ladies and gentlemen, to find out what the real story is. Let's see what it says here. Catholic Encyclopedia, Arianism, New Advent, a heresy, should be an heresy, which arose in the 4th century. In the 4th century. That's different than the other thing. They're all different. This other one says the Arian heresy was the first of the great heresies. Okay. But, okay, so it says, let me just open this up, this Catholic. Okay, listen. It was the first Christological heresy to seriously threaten the church. It denied the divinity of Christ, Arius, while other catechetical school in Alexandria, blah, 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 right? So here it's telling you that it denies the divinity of Christ, right? But what did I just read you here? What did I just read just after this? Before this, I mean. Unbelievable. It just said that he was the Son of God. Didn't it say that? So, but he was created by God and subordinate to God, right? So, very, very interesting. And here's another one. Ready? There. This is by Hilaire Belloc, Chapter 3, The Arian Heresy. The Arianism was the first of the great heresies. There had been from the foundation of the church at Pentecost AD 29:1 to 33 a massive heretical movements filling the first three centuries. Now the Catholics said it was in the fourth century, right? you know what I mean? So somebody's covering up something here. Something's all over the place. This is saying it started right away, right? So they had turned nearly all of them upon the nature of Christ. The effect of his predication and personality and miracles, but most of all his resurrection, had been to move everyone who had any faith at all in the wonder that presented to a conception of divine power running through the whole affair. Now, the central tradition of the church, as in other case disputed doctrine, was strong and clear from the beginning that he was undoubtedly a man. He had been born as men are born. He had died as men died. He had lived as a man and had been known as a man by a group of close companions and a very large number of men and women who had followed him and heard him witness his actions. But, said the church, he was also God. God had come down to earth and become incarnate as man. He was not merely a man influenced by the divinity, nor was he a manifestation of the divinity. You see, this gets all, you know, this gets a little fruity here, you know, crazy. He was at the same time fully God and fully man. On the central tradition of the church, the tradition of the church never wavered. Anyway, all I'm saying is, you see how confusing this all is? Now, so Fritz had said what the real thing was. They denied the divinity of Jesus Christ, and that is an heresy. And so, not to confuse you, I don't want to, you know, delve any more into any of that, but all I'm saying is the people that claim to adhere to this heresy somehow have tried to cover it up, it seems to me. I don't know what you think, but that's what it seems to me. Because I don't think Fritz lied. I think Fritz told the truth. And now all of a sudden it's changed. Just like history changes, you know what I mean? So we're continuing here. We're on page 177. Luther had an amazing literary output. He published about once every 2 weeks. Russell is like a drop in the bucket. The author, having used Luther's translation at his day-to-day Bible for several years, as his day-to-day, so Fritz used Luther's translation for several years, fully agrees with Heinz Blum's assessment that the Luther's Bible translation is genius. One example of this photo drama of creation cover, which bills the book as science, history, philosophy, springing from the Word of God, Marius Richard, Luther, London, Quartet Books Limited, 1974, pages 39 and 70. So this is just a note. Okay, so we continue. We'll continue here. Consider that the three great Bible translations of Western culture are the Vulgate, Luther's, and the Authorized Version, King James. Only Luther is the work of a single man. At first, the author thought Luther must have borrowed from previous German translations, but a study of those shows that their quality was so poor that Luther received little benefit from them. Heinz Blum, in Martin Luther, Creative Translative, page 7, states, Luther is indeed one of the supreme literary geniuses of the entire Christian tradition, at the same time that he is one of the keenest and boldest Christian thinkers of all time. The real study of Luther's German Bible has hardly begun. Blum set out to show text by text that magnitude and sheer brilliance of Luther's achievement. Luther's approach to the scriptures was entirely different than Russell's. Russell would develop a reasonable scheme and mold scriptures to it. That sounds typical today of what I've seen. His mystical interpretations, his emphasis of Christ, his inability to simply let scriptures speak for themselves, places Russell parallel to the Masons and a great distance from Luther. Francis A. Schaeffer describes the approach of Martin Luther and other reformers. The men of the Reformation, in contrast to the Renaissance humanists, they refuse to accept the autonomy of human reason, which acts as though the human mind is infinite with all knowledge within its realm. Sounds like theosophy. Rather, they took seriously the Bible's own claim for itself, that it is the only final authority. The church was under the teaching of the Bible, not above it and not equal to it. It was sola scriptura. This stood in contrast to the humanism that had infiltrated the church after the first centuries of Christianity. At its core, therefore, the Reformation was the removing of the humanistic distortions which had entered the church. Very interesting, eh? Russell's emphasis on human reason meant his movement took off in the opposite direction of the Reformation, and his movement created some of the same things that the Reformation sought to destroy. The Russell movement went on the same course other similar movements have. The church became an authority whose pronouncements are truth. The Watchtower Society, as it progressed away from the Reformation principles, ended up creating a replica of the Catholic Church. I hope you're hearing that, Catholic people. Its basis of authority has become almost a carbon copy, and its hierarchy has an exact one-to-one relationship with the Catholic structure. Just substitute president for pope, governing body for college and cardinals, etc. Right on down, this is where the movement ended. Russell gave it that direction. Luther threw reason aside and looked beyond reason to simply trust the scriptures for what they say. Martin Luther was a scholar whose message touched a whole continent and tugged at the anxieties of people from all over Europe. His Bible translation unified High German as a language and was popular for Germans for many years in the fashion the English world has treated the King James. Luther took sin very seriously, very serious. Russell has a very light view of sin, similar to the Masonic view. Real Christianity is set apart from the other religions on the gravity of sin. This, if anything, sets Russell's belief in a class more in line with theosophy, as I said, or Hinduism. Russell's view of God places him in a class apart from Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. With so many beliefs, different, you know, that's funny that Fritz would write that because he obviously doesn't know that Judaism is not a religion and that it's not a holy book or anything. However, we'll just let that, you already understand it and so do I, so you know what I mean. With so many beliefs different than Luther, Russell can be likened to Luther in terms of his beliefs. He can't be. In terms of accomplishments, Russell pales compared to Luther. This is not to say that Russell wasn't a great man who accomplished a lot, but Martin Luther was in a class above Russell. That's because he was German. Yes, that's right, he was the tribe of Judah. Part of Russell's lack of permanent accomplishment was that the movement he founded was based less on ideas than on personal loyalty to him as their faithful and wise servant. His theology was based on human reason. See, that's theosophy. Let me explain to you theosophy, what the whole thing that they were trying to teach you in The Wizard of Oz is this. You can search and search and search and search and what you're going to find out in the end is that you don't need to look to any God. You don't need to look to anybody else. The answer to all your problems is in your own backyard. In other words, in you. The answer, you can come to reason out what all your problems. You don't need God. You don't need anything. You don't need salvation. You don't need. You can come to this reason on your own. This is what it's all about. In other words, you're practically a God. And reason is the tool that you can use with your mind, like logic and everything else, to figure out and solve all your problems. You don't need God. You don't need anything. That's what theosophy, that's what the movie was telling you. Dorothy went on this big, you know, long journey along the yellow brick road and went to find out, you know, all she wanted was to go back home. And when she went back home, that's where she found peace and everything else. She, in other words, the answer to your problems are in your own backyard. That's what it's all about. So it says here again, we're back to the book. His theology, speaking of Charles Taze Russell, was based on human reason rather than a solid scriptural exegesis. In short, it was man-made. Some stayed loyal to his personality cult and his specific details. Others moved forward on Russell's principle, the light gets brighter. And I want to read I didn't finish reading the one before it. His theology, yeah, based on, right, okay, I did read that. So it continues, Russell does have one parallel with Luther. Just as Martin Luther and Charles Wesley were disappointed in the developments of the movements they began, Russell would be very disappointed in today's Jehovah Witnesses movement. But Charles Taze Russell, the kind of benevolent dictator the world loves, set the stage for what followed. Jehovah's Witnesses are the biggest legacy to the world. The forces Luther and Russell set into motion were bigger than the men themselves. The movements took off in their own directions in spite of what these two great men did. And on that thought, the author concludes, Luther and Russell were alike in a way. Sounds like Disney too, right? So we're on page 181. The Golden Age, February 4, 31, page 295, states that vaccinations are an unnatural pollution of human blood. All of the inventions that have been foisted upon mankind for their defilement, the most subtly devilish is that of vaccination. It's very interesting. The whole medical community thing. You know how you have pasteurized milk? Louis Pasteur was a Jew. Okay, you may not know that. Louis Pasteur, you see, what it's really doing is it's getting rid of the nutrients in milk. As far as I understand, I'm no scientist, but that's what I understand it means. In other words, it killed all the natural stuff in milk that was actually good for you, in a sense. That shouldn't surprise you, right? So it says medical research has indicated in a realistic way how blood transfusions may damage the individual's personality. The blood in any person is in reality the person himself. This is a review from last week. Transfusing blood then may amount to transfusing tainted personality traits. How great the danger may become if the blood is taken from criminals and other derelicts, which is from the Watchtower, May 15th, 1962, page 302. Whose policy towards blood transfusions is mysticism, the doctors or the Watchtower societies? That's the question. And now we're going into chapter 11. Very interesting. Yes, to say the least. We're moving right along here. This book is only 244 pages long. So we should finish this book within a month, I hope. And I think it's worth reading the whole book. I think we've learned a lot of things that are important for us to understand. Russell's Zionism, Masonic, question. In 1910 and 1911, Jews flocked. Remember what I told you? Oh, it's a Christian one, but they still came to see this fellow too. Let's see. In 1910 and 1911, Jews flocked to hear a Christian preacher. His message at St. Louis, June 11th, 6-11, June 11th and 12th, 1911, was Zionism the hope of the world? This fatherly figure of a preacher, the likes of which the Jews had never seen before, was Charles Taze Russell. So it was him. And he captured many of the Jews' attention, if not their hearts. So remember I told you that Jews and rabbis and so on and so forth came to listen to him preach? I wasn't kidding you. They flocked to his meetings. 4,000 Jews listened to this Christian preacher at New York City's Hippodrome on October 9th, 1910. Later in London, 4,600 went to the Royal Albert Hall to hear him and 800 at the Shoreditch Town Hall. 1,200 Jews came at Manchester, 1,400 Jews turned out at Glasgow, Scotland, and another 5,000 at Cincinnati, Ohio. What captured their hearts? Russell sums up his Hippodrome message. We are not preaching Jesus to them. Hello? Our message was to the Jews as Jews. From Isaiah 40, verse 1 and 2, comfort ye my people. Charles Taze Russell, Early American Zionist, page 69. Russell's repeated assurances that he wasn't proselytizing the Jews achieved their goal to calm the Jews' fears. Further, Russell had a radical message for his time, Zionism. Russell was a Zionist before the word existed. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so proud that Fritz did this work and he did a great job on this, and I'm glad that I'm bringing this to you, because I really don't believe many of you would have read this book otherwise. So in 1880, Russell began to predict that the Jews would come, that the Jews would return to Palestine. Now, this is before 1945 or even before World War I, right? His third book, Thy Kingdom Come, 1889, spends its whole eighth chapter on the restoration of Israel. His prophecy about the Jews, you can certainly see an angel's living in him, can't you? His prophecy about the Jews returning to Israel are, in the author's estimation, his most accurate, the others having failed. But this prophecy is ignored by the Watchtower Society because it clashes with their present light that the nation of Israel is not God in God's plan. Well, at least they know that. Russell applauded as he saw his predictions starting to happen. Russell advertised D.T. Herzl's launching of Zionism. You know Herzl, right? The creator of Zionism. So Russell thought of it before him. Russell published a Yiddish paper in Die Stimm, which also circulated in Europe and in Russia. Later he wrote Comfort to the Jews, telling them the Bible promised God would restore their nation. You see how he's off base, right? You see, the thing is, these people that claim that they speak to God and everything else, they don't even know the Father's name. They don't even know that the Jews are the serpent. Like the fellow I'm investigating right now says he speaks to angels, says he speaks to God. But God hasn't told him his name. And God hasn't told him that we are not the serpent, that the Jews are the serpent. Very interesting, isn't it? This is why, and one way you should be able to tell that things are not right. I mean, if you walked in the garden, remember that Moses was told Yahweh's name, and, you know, so was Jacob. So if you're talking to the father and you're calling him Baal, I think he might want to say, listen, my name is not Baal. Call me Yahweh. My name is Yahweh. Right? I mean, you'd tell your son that, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you say to your son, hey, you know, listen, Jacob, which is a derivative of the name James, by the way. It means supplanter. I thought my name, David James, meant beloved who is like God, but it's Michael who is like God. David James means beloved supplanter because James is a derivative of the name Jacob. Anyway, neither here nor there. Just a little note for you there. So these Jews were excited about what Russell was. Have you ever heard of Jews coming to see Christian preachers? They spit. When they walk by the Christian church, they spit at it, right? So this should tell you that this is not Christian whatsoever and has nothing to do with Christianity. And he was not preaching Jesus anyway. This is another gospel. This is another lie. And it fits in with the plan of the fallen angels, these Jews, and their father, the devil. Russell was applauded as he saw his prediction starting to happen, as I said before, right? So one of the greatest impacts of Russell's life was to promote the founding of modern Israel. This is one of the greatest impacts of Russell's life. Think on that. The author, which is Fritz Springmeier, would contend that the Jewish people, because of their knee-jerk reaction of fear towards Christians, have failed to realize the depth of support premillennialists have given the state of Israel. Fritz doesn't know either, ladies and gentlemen. He has no idea. As a matter of fact, as much as Fritz gave all this wonderful information, he did not have any idea that we are the true Israelites and that the Jews are the serpent seed line. But Fritz, as far as I know, didn't claim he was talking with God or angels. So I do believe it's Fritz's thing to direct us away from it's the Jews, just like all the rest of them. Just like the fellow I'm studying right now. It's the same old, same old. So I think that's incredible. So I'm going to read that again. One of Russell's greatest impacts, or one of the greatest impacts of Russell's life was to promote the founding of modern Israel, the, you know, blah, 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 blah. Because Freemasonry has been connected to Judaism, and it certainly is, it's the Kabbalah, the question has been raised as to whether Russell's pronounced Zionism might have Masonic connections. And I'm sure it does. You know why I know it does? Because the Jews gave the Freemasons their wish to rebuild the temple of Solomon in Israel, Jerusalem. You know what I'm saying? So, but let's see what Fritz says here now. This scheme appears to fail considering that Freemasonry has borrowed from and is supported by a wide spectrum of religious affiliations, including a variety of individual Christians. Dispensational premillennialists have been quick to support Zionism. Unless one could definitely pinpoint Russell's collaborating with Jews, I just did pinpoint it, it would be far less complicated to simply believe Russell's Zionism reflected some dispensational thought. Zionism has not been a Masonic movement, or have they played a role? Of course they have. Oh, he's going to say right here now. A real connection is Solomon's Temple. Solomon's Temple has played a big role in Freemasonry. It is described in detail in the various Freemason editions of the Christian Holy Bible and has received their close attention. Freemasons have numerous times written books and articles on Solomon's Temple. Solomon's Temple has also been a large point of interest for Zionists and premillennialists. They wait for its reconstruction. The Masonic edition of the Holy Bible describes Dr. John Wesley Kelchner, sounds like Jewish name to me, who assembled in 1923 all the materials to actually build another temple. Holman's, it shows this Pastor Russell on Brooklyn Tabernacle will lecture on the subject Jerusalem at 3 o'clock p.m. Anyway, let me just back up for a sec. Holman's Masonic Bible is illustrated with skilled paintings from, it should say, Kelchman's architectural plans. So obviously Kelchman is a Jew. He calls him Kelchman here. And then before, you see, I'm attuned to things. He called him Kelchner here before that. You see? If you're reading with me, if you just go back up, he calls him Dr. John Wesley Kelchner. Then when you come down here, he said, Masonic Bible is illustrated with skilled paintings from Kelchman's architectural plans. So whatever his name is, it's still Jew either way. In 1861, from a Parisian Jewish periodical, La Vérité Israélite, The True Israelite, volume 5, page 74, Vérité means the truth. It gives us insight in how the Masons and Jews had some similar goals. The connections are more intimate than one would imagine. Judaism should remain a lively and profound sympathy, a lively and profound sympathy for Freemasonry in general. And no matter concerning this powerful institution should be a question of indifference to it. For a very long time, owing to the progress in morals and public liberty, Freemasonry has been able to abandon its role of a mysterious secret society, forced by the fear and tyranny of former governments to veil itself in prudent obscurity. Its principles and methods have been known to the public for so long that it cannot be difficult to understand its spirit and aims. But the spirit of Freemasonry is that of Judaism, that's correct, in its most fundamental beliefs. Its ideas are Judaic. Its language is Judaic. Its very organization almost is Judaic. Whenever I approach the sanctuary where the Masonic order accomplishes its works, I hear the name of Solomon ringing everywhere and echoes of Israel. Let me stop right there. You see, remember I told you that Solomon is one of the heroes of the Freemasons and Jews? Right? Not only was Solomon the man who had the most wisdom up to his time, and probably since, he fell from grace. They're into that. That's what they're into. Solomon is a hero. He's also, it's his signet that is on the Israeli flag. It's not the Star of David. It's the signet that was on his ring that he used to control demons, or he thought he was controlling demons. It turns out that they said they were going to make him fall, and they did. You can't control demons, ladies and gentlemen. A brother of mine that says he knows a lot about that said that the demons like you to think that you are controlling them when in reality they're controlling you. Take heed to that message. So it continues, those symbolic columns are the columns of that temple, which is Jachin and Boaz. Remember I told you about it? You could even say that when they destroyed the Twin Towers, that was Jachin and Boaz. Anyway, regardless, those symbolic columns are the columns of that temple where each day Hiram's workmen receive their wages. They enshrine his revered name. The whole Masonic tradition takes me back to that great epoch when the Jewish monarch, there is no Jewish monarch, fulfilling David's promises, raised up to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, a religious monument worthy of the creator of heaven and earth. See, Fritz doesn't understand that our people are not Jews. He just, they don't, and these people just don't get it. Thank the Father that he has taught us these things. I'm going to stop right there. We're on page 185, and I'll mark that temple. And that's where we'll continue on next week. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. And until next time, study to show thyself approved.